Order your KDF shower filter, normally $49, for our special price of only $35, a $14 savings. Call now to order at 1-888-803-4438. Order today and save $14 by calling 1-888-803.
Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Colonel Barry Turner, retired from the British Army, and we're going to be talking about this move towards world government, this move towards the destruction, really, in my estimation, of the standards of our Christian civilization. And, of course, we see this in both Great Britain and the United States, because there is an Anglo-American establishment, a group of elitists, who are dedicated to the destruction of the existing society in Great Britain and the destruction of the great traditions that go back to the Magna Carta. And their counterparts here in the United States are dedicated to the destruction of the sovereignty of the United States and the establishment of a one-world government. Of course, they're using the military and financial power of the United States to bring about that world government. That's what our foreign aid's all about. If you haven't read John Perkins' great book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, we probably have some of the last ones readily available, new copies. But we also have a four-tape set with John Perkins, who was actually part of this whole movement, was actually recruited in by the NSA and then set off with private corporations to, of course, begin to bring the nations of the world under control as we move towards the New World Order, the New World Religion. Well, Colonel Turner, thank you very much for being with us this afternoon.
It's a pleasure to be back.
All right, fine. Well, you go ahead and pick up this story here.
Well, you use the key word, of course, when you open the transmission, that of power. And it's very interesting in passing. When President George W. Bush came to office, a picture of his cabinet appeared in a British newspaper, which referred to it as the richest cabinet in American history. Now, what is clear to me, in very general terms, is that the government in this respect in the United States is the multinational caucus. It is big business, the multinational corporations, and the banking system. In the UK, our cabinets rarely are comprised people of significant wealth. But on the other hand, they are subservient to these same powers. In effect, they have sold out to them. And this has long been the case, and it's certainly been the case with the present Labour government. So the end product is that there is little difference between the two. It's merely the way it's applied. Monsanto is a common fact. I think there were Monsanto links in the United States government, if not the cabinet directly. And in this country, this government attempted to sell out to Monsanto. This, of course, had been a key area in agriculture and food with genetic modification. But one looks further. Another problem here is to see what is being done and how and where we're going. When we spoke on the telephone, education was mentioned, and that's an important factor. But we are being slowly brought in our two countries, as far as I can see, to a sort of the status of a socialist state and a socialist dictatorship.
Well, you know, I think, Colonel, the significant thing is most people think socialism is redistribution of the wealth. No, it is basically a redistribution of the wealth of the middle class, but there is a ruling class in every socialist society, the Tony Blairs of this world, you know, who are elitists, and of course they intend to control everything. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlying beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is Colonel Barry Turner. He lives in Great Britain. He's retired from the British Army with the Corps of Engineers over there. And, of course, he's a frequent guest here on Radio Liberty. And we're talking about this elitist group in Great Britain and in the United States who want to bring about this one world government to destroy the sovereignty of Great Britain, the traditions of the Magna Carta, the freedoms that have been those of Englishmen for centuries, and here in the United States, of course, they want, of course, to destroy the sovereignty of our nation, and they are using the military and financial power of the United States and massive foreign aid. What do you think of massive foreign aid? Do you really think it's all about helping the people? If it's about helping the people, then why does a third of the world live on less than, you know, $2 a day, and almost a billion people live on less than $1 a day today? Are we really helping the people, or, of course, are we putting authoritarian figures into governments throughout the world who will go along with our plan for the New World Order, the New World Religion, and the installing of the New World Leader? And I'd like to suggest that the leaders of Great Britain and the leaders of the United States work very closely in harmony, and, of course, I have nothing against free enterprise, I have nothing against people making money, but there are some people who have accumulated a great deal of money who are elitists who really don't want freedom. For the common people, they want to rule over us. There's always been those who wanted the power, and of course, unfortunately, that many of those people are in key positions in the United States government and controlling the British government as well. So, Colonel, you pick up the thought there.
In passing, yes, the Third World and concern for the Third World. In fact, it continues to be exploited in a different way to the old imperial days, but it's still being employed economically as we know. And there's a lot of concern for human rights. But it's overplayed in the West, in both our countries. It's overplayed to a point of obsession. But the far less human rights, or the rights of children, in Africa, in Darfur, for example, and very little concern for that, very little genuine concern apart from the aid agencies, but politically none. And an article appeared in the British press quite recently that if we would only allow Africans to feed themselves, they could survive. But of course, what we do is exploit their resources.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Colonel Turner. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course Colonel Turner was just talking about how the propaganda is always going out. Oh, we've got to help the people in the underdeveloped areas. Oh, the children there. We're so concerned about the children living in poverty, and you'll see these pictures of tragic children, and their lot is tragic. Of course, are we really interested in helping them? Because if we're interested in helping them, we're doing a terrible job. We give tremendous amounts of money, literally billions of dollars, to ruthless dictators throughout the world who keep their people enslaved and, of course, in a state of chronic poverty, while, of course, the rich in those African countries or other countries throughout the world are living like feudal lords and, of course, the people. And we're keeping the people, you know, under the control of the ruthless feudal lords with our foreign aid money. We're not helping the people. You would think that after 50 years of foreign aid, we would help the people. And as I mentioned earlier, there's almost 2 billion people who live today on less than $2 a day, about 1 billion who live on less than $1 a day. How could you do such a poor job unintentionally? So pick the story up there, Colonel.
Well, if I could go back to this agricultural question and feeding, we are now the big problem now, one of the big problems looming, is this question of biofuel, which is going to convert agricultural land which once produced food to producing material that will meet part of our energy requirements. I remember years ago there was a case of strawberries being exported from Egypt. Now, strawberries for the Western market. Now, it's no good to Egyptians who may be starving, who may need the food. And you can extend this across Africa. And, of course, aid, when it comes, brings, again, the bogey name Monsanto, and, of course, there are others, and the imposition of GMOs. And this is a commercial exploitation. It's not aid at all. It's an investment to suit the Western powers. But if I can go back to something I mentioned last time, but I think it's a key to this whole thing, in that what it is really about in terms of power and how the lid is kept on it. Because we have grown in the West to accept everything that goes and accept precisely what the media tells us. And this is this statement by Nicholas Murray Butler on the 19th of November, 1937. I quote, the Fabian Nicholas Murray Butler, Fabian Socialist notice, addressed a banquet in London with the words, communism is the instrument with which the financial world can topple national governments and then erect a world government with a world police and world money. And this is the way we're clearly heading. I don't suppose anybody's still alive who could vouch for that statement.
But that's exactly what we're doing. People have forgotten we brought the Marxist communist thug who rules Rhodesia today, Zimbabwe. The United States State Department brought him to power. We brought the Marxist government that rules South Africa and Southwest Africa to power. Back in 1959, it was the U.S. State Department, the CIA, that brought Fidel Castro to power, but we can't let the American people know that. So then you go back to 1949, the United States government, you put an arms embargo on the nationalist Chinese so they couldn't get weapons anywhere in the world, undermine them to bring the communists to power in China. And most Americans think that the communists are the enemy, whereas they've been financed by the ruling elite here in the United States. They're the finest enemy that our tax money could buy. Go right ahead.
I think if we go back to the 19th century, in modern times, it's quite clear that the conspiracy, and there's no doubt there is one, has a continuity from the Illuminati of 1776. But if we go forward through the 19th century and the various secret societies that operated and the attempt to create or generate simultaneous uprisings across Europe in 1848 through Marx and the evolution of socialism, which is conterminous with communism, we can see the thread beginning, because what has happened is that through these beginnings there's a continuity right through to the present day. And I liken it, it occurred to me quite recently, if we look at the illustration of the DNA helix, it's two spirals intertwined in the science of manipulating genes. Now, the conspiracy, to me, strikes me as an elongated form of that, going through the 19th century right through to the present time. But there are far more strands to the helix. It's a multiple-stranded helix. But that intertwined coil, spiraling along, and the various elements that are controlling us are all organic to this. You could quote the Council on Foreign Relations as part of this. The Bilderberg Group, World Trade Organization, as it is controlled, the World Bank, they all spiral in together to create this power. But if we look at Marx, in the 19th century, Marx and Engels found it was very difficult to generate revolution, generate any form of armed action. And they recruited two young Prussian officers, And this is where I think the science, as it came, of insurrection and subversion developed with the obviously the Prussian background, and this was what Marx and Engels lacked. Now, as we came into the 20th century, we had the Bolshevik Revolution, and we had, under the Soviet system, the development of Soviet military doctrine. Now, it's contained in the Soviet Military Encyclopedia, which I think is about 8 volumes long, and it generates as an art form the armed and the ideological struggle. It is incredibly detailed. Very often people who got a whiff of this talk about Sun Tzu, and here we have diversion. In that, if you can undermine your enemy without firing too many bullets, then you can win in a more subtle way, as opposed to a full frontal conflagration. You just undermine the enemy with the ideological struggle, and you have the armed struggle and the ideological struggle intertwined. Now, what interests me is that I've got several bound volumes of congressional investigations, and it was quite clear that in the 1950s and 1960s, the United States, or those concerned with the investigations in the United States, had a very clear understanding of Marxism-Leninism and the Soviet system as it worked. But all, I think, on this side of the water we get is tales of Senator McCarthy as an extreme right-winger and, bad luck and so on and so forth, because he was involved in these investigations. But in fact, it's much, much larger than that. But why has it not come down through the education system, through the media, to expose exactly what has been going on? And this, of course, is where we realize that there are other controls here preventing us knowing. And people in modern society, the young people, and organizations like the police force and in our country, the National Health Service hierarchy, the management, have been indoctrinated in a certain way. And it's a sort of virus. If you look at the way certain things have been developed, evolved, entertainment, political correctness, control of the media. And in this country, we have a health and safety executive, which was formed, really, to protect working people from abuses by major employers. But it has become a petty bureaucracy imposing the most absurd limitations on the most ordinary and traditional activities, like village fates, three-legged races, not allowed at school because people might get hurt, that sort of thing.
But don't you think that what we're really doing is moving towards a totally regulated and regimented society? And really, as you pointed out, there really has been an ongoing world revolution. It really started in the United States in 1776. Then it spread to France in 1789, or perhaps our revolution actually began in France, but the practical revolution in 1789. There is a continuing world revolution. You talk about Marx. Nobody ever asked who financed Karl Marx, and it was financed by a secret society called the League of the Just. And of course, his closest friend, Frederick Engels, was the son of an extremely wealthy capitalist. And all of these ideas of socialism really come from people of great wealth who realize that if we're going to destroy the existing society and replace it with one that they control, first of all, they've got to get their people to go along with these ideas of socialism, but have no existence in reality. All of this is simply talk to overthrow the existing society, create a new one, which they will control along their path to this idea of world government. It's been going on, really started with our revolution, the French Revolution, the German Revolution, the Italian Revolution, and then at the end of at the First World War, the Russian Revolution, the Turkish Revolution, and simply the revolution that existed in Central Europe at that time. People don't understand that the wars are fought to destroy existing civilization, all along this pathway, step by step by step, towards the one world government. and the one world religion, and of course the destruction of, in my estimation, of Western civilization. We're going to be back in just a moment with Colonel Barry Turner, and of course he's making the point that today things are so incredibly oppressive in his country. I mean, you've got this massive bureaucracy forcing all sorts of things onto the people, which really don't make sense. Well, of course, what they're doing is dissuading us, getting us so busy doing things we can't see what's really going on or understanding how our freedom is being destroyed. Colonel, you go ahead and pick the story up there.
I go back briefly to diversion. In the Soviet Union, a manual was produced in great detail called the Diversionary Service. And this is how one might say that this process was developed as an art form. Diversion by controlling labor, by controlling strikes and that sort of thing. Control of the media in particular. Now, the diversion was undertaken by the Frankfurt School in Germany, the School for Social Research, and founded in 1923. And this is where the principles of diversion were applied. The ideological struggle to control the mind. And the it's a subtle process through the universities. I mentioned this last time, I seem to recall, the Gramsci's long march through the institutions, the long educational progress to put people in the most senior positions who, in fact, had been mentally conditioned. To destroy the aim of the Frankfurt School included to destroy culture, the family, religion, morality. Now, this is clearly undermining any well-established nation-state with its own culture, such as the United Kingdom, such as the United States. If we look at one random example here, where it's something is in the bloodstream without people even knowing it, we have a popular antiques program shown daily during the week at midday. Two teams of people, two pairs, compete against each other to locate, buy antiques at an antiques fair somewhere in the country, and these are then auctioned. And of course, either they're auctioned for less than the teams purchase the item, or maybe they will make a profit, sometimes a handsome one, and they buy something, say, $10, and it's sold for $100. But at the end of this competition, the two teams are lined up. Now, there used to be losers, winners and losers. One team lost and the other won. But the presenter now, of quite recent times, makes a point of saying there are no losers anymore, only runners-up. In other words, we are manipulating the attitude of people that nobody must be allowed to lose. And this, of course, applies to education and to examination, or to competition, sports competitions. You must not have people who lose. And, of course, it creates a very soft approach, because people are just softened up. You've got to have competition. It is tough. Life is tough. But if I can quote two examples where political correctness has its effect. Now, in the case of feminism, this is fine, okay. My mother was a great feminist. Before the war, we had a lady doctor and a lady dentist. But you can push it so far. And this is where genuine feminism can be manipulated by people who know only too well what they're doing. And two examples. Feminism in the Anglican Church has effectively split the Anglican Church. Now, when this was pushed, I'm sure the people who were behind this knew exactly the damage it was going to do. And if you attack religion, here's one way of doing it. So you're back to the Frankfurt School and diversion.
Hold that last thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Colonel Barry Turner. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Colonel Barry Turner from Great Britain. And he's talking about the Frankfurt School, how the Frankfurt School was used to begin to march through all of the various foundations of our society, one after another, to destroy the family, to destroy the educational system, to destroy the military, to destroy, and of course to change everything. This is the whole purpose of the Frankfurt School. Of course, nobody ever asked where their money comes from, and of course, all of these moves towards socialism came from the CFR, that is the Carnegie Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Rockefeller Foundation, and they have been working for years to introduce socialism into our society, take away concepts of individual freedom and liberty under God, and replace them, of course, with these socialist concepts, and destroy the existing society. People don't understand why America has changed. It's changed because people with a great deal of money, the great tax-exempt foundations, destroyed the America that I was raised in. Colonel, go right ahead.
You gave me a cue a moment ago when you mentioned the armed forces. Now, if you want to undermine the armed forces, then what you do, or what has been done, is to push the employment of women right through to the front line. Now, there's no doubt about it. Okay, you can have guerrilla movements, you can have communist movements, say in Vietnam as well, would employ women on an equal basis. Those are totally different cultures anyway. But in the West, and I believe it was tried in Israel and found wanting. Nevertheless, in this country and in America, women have been pushed through to the front line. Bit by bit, the service chiefs have been given way, had their arms twisted quite clearly, because I don't think any senior officer would accept women willingly. You have social complications. You have women serving with married men away from home, and you're bound to have affairs, and there'll be numerous affairs of this kind, and between ranks, between officers and soldiers. And it is socially disruptive. You have different requirements for equipment to meet the female form, so your administration is made that much more complex. But it must be 10, 15 years ago, Phyllis Schlafly wrote in a newsletter about a U.S. carrier taking to sea. A proportion of the crew, proportion of the female crew had to stay behind because they were pregnant. A further number were able to take to sea in the early stages of pregnancy, but while at sea became inoperative because they were too far advanced. They'd reached a sort of limit of whatever months. And others became pregnant on the voyage. Now, what way is this to run an army, or a navy in this case? And the same thing has happened in this country. A friend of mine at the beginning of the Falklands War lost a key member of his staff during the preparations because she went on maternity leave. Now, you cannot work efficiently, but you see, this is what political correctness has done. There are two examples, the church and the armed forces. You push it too far, and those who push it too far in this way know exactly what the end product is going to be. The essential difference along the line here, I think, in the day-to-day discussion is the break point between internationalism and nationalism. And it's very interesting. What you have under socialism is internationalism. This is what socialism is all about. In this country, the British Labour Party, which really was intertwined with socialism for most of its time, the British Labour Party was established to bring justice to the working classes, the miners, people of that sort. Now, that has largely been achieved, but the present regime, Blair and Brown, are not genuine Labour. That's history now. They are socialists, international socialists, and everything they do is geared to breaking down the country on international lines. Now, here, of course, we have the differences between the left and right, because socialism and communism are regarded as left. And conservatism, whatever that might mean, but tradition, shall we say, as one example, one facet, is regarded as right-wing. But you see, what you got essentially is the difference between those who are part of the nation and the national culture and those who want to internationalize it. Now, you never hear criticism of the left wing in the same way that you hear criticism of the right wing, because the right wing is identified with the nation, which is anathema to the socialists, to the aims expressed by Nicholas Murray Butler.
Hold that thought, we'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course Colonel Turner is just talking about this effort to destroy the very fabric of a society, and out of the fabric and the destruction, that's what they really want, of the existing society in both Great Britain and the United States, will come this new society where you'll have feminized men, you'll have people who do not know what they believe in, you'll destroy patriotism, you'll destroy any sense of right and wrong and morality, and then of course they can build a new society. With, of course, people who will be quite willing to go along and acquiesce to anything. And, of course, I really believe a lot of this is going to come about as they destroy the value of our currency, impoverish our people, and starving people will look to government to provide for them, be quite willing to give up their freedom. Colonel, you picked the story up there.
We go on to this question of left and right and the process of division and destruction. Very rarely, as I just indicated, do we hear the left exposed. The left is with us in socialism, if you like to look at it that way, in the socialism of our present government, and I suspect in the actions, although they are better concealed probably, of the United States government. Now, in the case of the right wing, it's a very different story. Now, the British National Party, if you look at it, of course, stands for the nation and stands primarily for the Anglo-Saxon culture, although they do accept the fact that there is going to be immigration and people of all races, but not in excess. But they are vilified, although their values are very much like the values of the old conservatism of 20, 30, 40 years ago. But not acceptable today. Now, a famous ballerina in this country happened to join the British National Party. And what a hoo-ha this created in the press. Now, it's as though the press didn't understand what the game was all about. But because she was perceived right-wing, and because it was associated with the British National Party, all hell let loose. You never find this in the case of the left. So there is an underlying reason here. Those behind the scenes, there are those behind the scenes who know only too damn well. Now, Berlusconi is making progress in Italy. Now, he stands for control of immigration quite clearly, and he stands for Italy, for the Italians. But here we have an article in the Guardian newspaper.
You're going to have to hold that thought, Colonel. We'll be right back in just a moment as the stations come on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Colonel Barry Turner. He's talking about certainly this destruction of the traditional values of nationalism, of love of country, and of course how this is being eroded over in Great Britain. Then he was bringing up, of course, what's going on over in Italy with Berlusconi. The new prime minister is an Italian nationalist, and of course opposed to the socialists in Italy, as with everywhere else in the world, socialists of course have an intense hatred of our nation and the nation state. They are internationalists. They want to bring about a world government. I never knew a socialist who really cared one hoot about America or Great Britain or Italy for that matter. They are dedicated to bringing about this new world order, the new world religion, whereas we have many people who supposedly are on our side, who are only pretending to be on our side, and their real goal is exactly the same as the socialists. In fact, they finance the socialists as if they were a foil, so you would have somebody to argue against, as step by step we move away from individual freedom, away from nationalism, into this this one world government that seems to be coming. Colonel, go ahead, pick up the story.
I just read the heading from this column on Berlusconi. It's by Martin Jakes, who is a well-known communist Marxist academic. Now, what on earth is he doing writing in a British paper with this freedom? It's headed, A Fascist Past Rekindled. Now, first of all, you have to define fascism. And I've said this before, in my 1929-14 volume of the Encyclopaedia Britannica, fascism was certainly a union between the socialists, as they were under Mussolini, and big business. But it certainly wasn't a right, I wouldn't have called it a right-wing affair. However, the subtitle, The Far Right is Embedded in the Italian Psyche as Scenes Reminiscent of Mussolini's Rome Show. In other words, here is a communist, a Marxist, fulminating against the right and given free rein to do so. Now, this is a common pattern. Whenever the national traditions show their heads. On the other hand, we have a man called Ruben Fauber. He was an East European refugee originally. Now, he was exposed in the Times for ferrying funds from the Soviet Union to be used to undermine British industry. Now, you know, he might as well have put on military uniform and admitted to what he was doing. It was a matter of the same, because the armed and the ideological struggles are intertwined. Here is the counterbalance, the ideological struggle, in effect, undertaken by Ruben Fauber. And we know there were many moles in, one was called the mole, but we had many communist activists in the trade unions, in the motor industry. And what has this country got now? And there are other reasons as well, I know. It's got no motor industry worth having of its own. It was destroyed. It was totally disrupted with incessant strikes. Now, you can't live like that. Now, another case was, in fact, Fauber, of course, should have been banged up in prison. No, you see, it's just a report and it passes by. Some time ago, and I haven't been able to find the record, but there was an elderly woman who was, I suppose you'd call her respectable, sort of English middle class, who admitted that she had been a Soviet agent for many, many years as a younger woman. Now, she was just, there was an article about this woman, and no action was taken against her. Now, this is quite incredible. She was betraying this country. Quite possibly had cost many lives, and yet she was just regarded as a dear old lady, you know, let her live on and, no fuss. Albert and this woman got away scot-free. Compare it with the fuss about this ballerina joining the British National Party, and any alleged war criminal associated, shall we say, with the Holocaust could never sleep, could never, they're fugitives, and they're hounded down. Not the same here with people manipulating society for the left, for the benefit of the left. But there is another one. You see, I was talking to a man, he was a Jewish gentleman, and he got some very strong views, and we had an interesting conversation. But I mentioned Professor Noam Chomsky, and he dismissed him out of hand. He said, he's a liberal lefty. Now, this is use of the left-right cachet again. Now, it's an irrelevance. What concerns me, and I've read a lot of his work, is that if Noam Chomsky expresses the truth, then it's no good giving him a political cachet and dismissing him like that. If it's the truth, it doesn't matter damn who wrote it. Now, in his interviews with David Barsamian, called The Chronicles of Dissent, he refers to the way the media and the use of propaganda, the journals of opinion and general, including the broad participation of the articulate intelligentsia, the educated part of the population, are controlling what people think and do. And this is typical of what is happening both sides, I think, of the Atlantic, control and ownership of the media, which, of course, cross-border, cross-media ownership was not allowed in this country. But under John Major's government, of course, it came to pass. Now, we allowed it to happen, and now you have people as powerful as Murdoch. Noam Chomsky makes it quite clear that these people are these academics, these talking heads, these people who control what we write, are often not even aware, not conscious of what they're doing. Because, in effect, they have what he calls an effective system of indoctrination. And they are, in effect, the commissars. And they believe themselves that they're independent, critical minds. They're not. They've been conditioned. So, you see, we have to look at what is really going on. And this is, again, how we are controlled. This is how we come to be in the state we are.
Well, I think it's important for people to understand that there's a whole dialectic process. You have these two opposing forces. You have the left, you have the right, you have the conservative, you have the liberal. They argue back and forth on all these issues. And Noam Chomsky is, of course, one of the people I look upon as on the left. He gets a tremendous amount of play from the media. He gets a tremendous amount of play from in the liberal fields. But he will never talk about what the real forces are that are working out. He will never talk about the Council on Foreign Relations, of these people of great wealth who are intent upon destroying the sovereignty of our nation. So he plays the part of being a liberal and very, very effective at it. And same way we have people who play out the part of being conservatives, but they never get around to what the real issues are. And if you begin talking about this cabal of people of great wealth and power, who are some pretend to be liberal, some pretend to be conservative, but their real goal is the destruction of America and, of course, the destruction of our way of life and the bringing about of this one world government. They never will allow that. You write a letter to the editor and you talk about this Council on Foreign Relations, which is a front for a secret society that was created at the end of the 19th century. And, of course, you will never get those articles printed. You go call our call-in programs, Rush Limbaugh. He will cut you off so fast. Rush Limbaugh is the finest conservative money could buy. But you go right ahead, Colonel. I share your concern. People do not understand how Noam Chomsky plays a part. Much of what he writes is absolutely true. It's what he doesn't write that concerns me.
Yes, indeed. I've heard this said. But if we can come back to the United Kingdom, I haven't a lot of time for the so-called conservative Daily Telegraph or Sunday Telegraph. But nevertheless, one man writes quite often now in the Telegraph, Simon Heffer. He has put a finger on what is going on. And he wrote a very interesting article headed, "Don't Mistake the Government's Malignance for Incompetence." Now, we know with the present Labour government, and it's beginning to show in the last few months, right through Tony Blair's regime as well, in fact, but there has been a lot of administrative incompetence, genuine and total incompetence. The National Health Service and the mess they've made of that is typical. But Heffer makes the point that the party is, in the case of immigration, doctrinally driven. There's a doctrinally driven determination by the new government in 1997, when Blair came to power, to destroy our national identity and to advance multiculturalism. Now, the handling of immigration has been quite incompetent and clearly quite dishonest. But there, you see, you have the underlying explanation about why. Because multiculturalism and mass immigration from the third world, certainly, is going to dilute and eventually destroy our culture.
That's really,
now,
that's
the
really
other
what it's all
one
about,
which he mentions is the state of the railways. Now, the railways under Margaret Thatcher were denationalized, and they made a mess of selling them piecemeal to different parts of business. The track was responsibility of one, and the carrying companies compete with each other and use the same rail network. And it's been chaotic ever since. But you see, what we have is people who are in charge, who are managing these affairs, and particularly in the National Health Service, which has been a running sore. They are products of the modern education system, where leadership, independence of thought, initiative, and a certain toughness have been eliminated quite deliberately. And you get a lot of doublespeak in the case of education about how it's improving and various initiatives and so on. But it's going the other way, and it's gone the other way, and intended to go the other way. For many years, we have been running down competitive sport in education, in state education. In fact, school playing fields are notoriously being sold off for property developers, and schools finish up without any decent area where the pupils can exercise physically and compete in sport. Of course, the territory has been disposed of, and they've been talking about, you know, reintroducing this sort of thing, sport and physical training and so on, in a much more organized way, which we did once have. At the same time, they're allowing playing fields to continue to be sold off. But Heffer also wrote in February, under the heading, Gordon Brown proposes the Stalinization of our culture. And here we go again. The pressure is being brought to bear to impose culture. Now, culture should be a self-sustaining thing. We have libraries, we have art galleries, theatre. It's all there. But what Brown is trying to do is to legislate, introduce culture through legislation. To tell people how to become more cultured, to appreciate the theatre and history and the art galleries. But it's a creative thing by legislation. And this is pure Stalinization. Jack Straw is proposing to introduce some kind of legislation to control the way we behave to each other. Now, this has gone a long way already, but he's proposing a form of rights legislation, which we don't need. We've not needed it. But you see, under socialists, they have to legislate this way. But I see the political correctness expressed here in the case of the United States as well. This, of course, gives us common ground when we come to education. Effort to ban photographing kids, they all say kids, not children these days, in public. A bit hysterical. Now, this is the American Free Press, the old Spotlight magazine resurrected, the 31st of March. Now, this is a question of not allowing children to be photographed because their photographs might risk being used by paedophiles and people like that. But it's gone so over the top in this country, and clearly they have the same hang-ups in the United States. Another one here, from the same publication in April, more recently, homeschool rights targeted. Now, parents, as in this country, who are dissatisfied with the standard of education and the what children are being taught under controlled education, in socialist terms, this is, the socialist control, they are being targeted for educating children at home. And, of course, we have this attack on religious teaching in schools.
Well, you know, one of the things that really disturbs me about what's going on in Great Britain is the fact that you are becoming a surveillance society. They are putting those cameras up every place in London. It's said that the average Londoner will be photographed 300 times every day. And where is the outcry from the British people about what's happening? You're moving rapidly, even more rapidly than we are, towards George Orwell's 1984. I mean, everything is being watched, and you are being surveilled all the time. Your media is controlled, and these ideas of individual freedom, which were the bulwark of British society, are being simply relinquished by the British people without even an objection.
Well, we have an embedded government dedicated to this kind of control, socialism. They've been in power for almost 10 years. Whether the Tory government, the Conservatives, who are currently making huge gains in the local government elections, whether the Conservatives will change, I don't know, but I doubt it.
I don't think so either.
We're bound by this United Nations legislation and the European Union legislation, and it's a massive bureaucracy, all geared to a socialist state.
Well, of course, we saw that in the United States when the Republicans took control of the Congress in 1994, and eventually, of course, when George Bush came in, the Republicans controlled the presidency and both houses of Senate and certainly the Congress. And what did they do? They began the biggest spenders of all time. They began passing more and more laws to regulate and control the individual. So it's one thing to say you oppose the people in power, but when you get the power, you want to use it even more so. And I suspect that this will happen if the Tories take control, because I believe the leaders of both political parties are controlled by exactly the same people. And that's what Professor Quigley said in his prophetic book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. We'll be right back with Colonel Barry Turner to wrap up the program. Well, Colonel, you have 3 minutes to finish the program.
Well, very quickly, having mentioned the question of complaints about photographing children in the United States, here we have a school picture. Junior school picture where the faces of the children have been removed and replaced by a sort of grinning sort of circles, you know, two eyes and a sort of curved mouth to conceal the identity of the children. So we've got exactly the same problem here. But we haven't got anywhere near the economic collapse, which this control of society has, in effect, allowed to be unleashed because the power of the international banking system is now literally just that, international. It's vast, it's hugely competitive, with massive sums swishing around the world on a computer. And what you have is this increasing spiral where none of them can get off the roundabout, because it is, as I say, it is competitive. And we've had the subprime mortgage crash, and the collapse of banks, and billions of dollars have been lost, written off. Yet, in this country, we're told society is prosperous, the country is prosperous. It's not. It's knee-deep in debt. And it's going to hit all people who borrow money. And it's going to get worse, and it will lead to a recession. And this has been forecast on both sides of the Atlantic very strongly. But it was being forecast years ago. But the banking system, the multinational corporations, control governments. And they have been, in effect, out of control. And where we go from here, I don't know, because we haven't even brought India and China on stream with, what, 750 million and 1 1/3 billion people and burgeoning economies, with the Indian steel barons now owning the steel industries in this country. We haven't even seen the beginning yet. But they are still committed at this point in time to working in the global economy. So where we go from here, I must say, mystifies me. But the next 10, 20 years are going to be very revealing, I think, and I think it'll surprise an awful lot of people.
Well, I think we're going to see the continued unfolding of the world revolution that began back in 1776 and persist until this very day. Well, our guest has been Colonel Barry Turner. Thank you, Colonel. Really appreciate so much for being with us again.
Thank you for having me.
God bless, and thanks, Sue. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. It was Colonel Barry Turner. Of course, we've been talking about, really, of course, what's happening in Great Britain. But they're trying to destroy the very culture of Great Britain. They're doing a great job of it. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Colonel Turner. I was just talking about the effort to destroy the culture of Great Britain. They're trying to destroy the culture here in the United States, and this is not happening by accident. We're not losing our social mores. We're not having a vulgarity become commonplace by accident. This is all planned, and of course you hear the things that they'll say on radio and television now that would have brought terrible repercussions 10, 15 years ago, and now they're commonplace, and understand little bit by little bit, they're getting us to change our attitude towards God, towards family, towards country. Well, let me simply point out that there is a world revolution. There's a wonderful book we carry. It's written by the Librarian of Congress, James H. Billington. It's called Fire in the Minds of Men, a book we recommend and recommend strongly. And then, of course, to put this into its context, because, of course, James Billington, being a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, will not tell you about what's going on here, but he tells you about the continuing revolution as far as what happened in Europe is concerned, and how the revolution actually continued right up through the Cuban Revolution, a world revolution that began in 1776, or at least 1789, and continued until 1959. But then, of course, what really happened in 1959 when Fidel Castro came to power? Well, that's why you need to see my DVD called World Revolution, because you'll see my interview with the ambassador to Cuba in 1959 as he tells you, we brought Fidel Castro to power. The CIA knew he was a communist. The State Department knew he was a communist. The president knew he was a communist. And we brought him to power. But we can't let the American people know that. And simply we go into the whole facade, this whole effort to confuse the American people about Fidel Castro, to make us believe he's the enemy, as we're supposed to believe that today Hugo Chavez is the enemy, and yet, of course, it was the CIA that brought Chavez to power and has kept him in power, all the while he rants and raves against America. And Ahmadinejad over there in Iran, people have forgotten it was the CIA that brought the mullahs to power back in 1979. And, of course, it's the same pattern over and over and over again. Let me suggest, of course, some of the material you can get from Radio Liberty. Certainly, Fire in the Minds of Men is such an important book. But then, of course, you need to get my DVD, World Revolution, and a little pamphlet we put together called the Communist-Capitalist Alliance. Because, of course, all this talk about communism being on the left and capitalism being on the right has just to confuse you. And the truth of the matter is, the United States has funded communism since its inception. I should say the people of great wealth and power. And then, of course, you need to get the book Wall Street and the Rise of and the Bolshevik Revolution. That's Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution. And there in the opening pages, you'll see a cartoon that appeared in the papers probably about 1910, 1912, maybe it was 16, I've forgotten, but it shows Karl Marx surrounded by the capitalists of that time, and they were all saying how much they supported him. Why? Because socialism is the vehicle by which you destroy the fabric of our society and the values of our society so it can be ruled by the new ruling class. So that book, again, is Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution. And then, of course, we have Professor Sutton's book, The Best Enemy Money Could Buy, and my interview with Professor Sutton, The Best Enemy Money Could Buy. And you must understand that certainly all during the Vietnam War, when our boys were fighting and bleeding and suffering and dying over there, why, we were financing the communists in Russia and building the Kama River plant for them, the largest truck plant in the world, and putting in new highways for them and giving them money and of course, re-equipping the Ford plant at Gorky so they could provide the trucks and the weapons for the North Vietnamese to be used in the South to kill our boys. And just as today in Afghanistan, where our boys are fighting the Taliban that's funded by the Pakistani ISI, that's their intelligence, which is funded by the Pakistani government, which is funded with your tax money, it's deja vu all over again. Understand nothing as it appears to be. Please go to our website, radioliberty.com. You can listen to our programs, read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, see our new talk, the planned police state and get the syllabus that goes with that and my talk, The Forbidden Secret, and the talk and the syllabus that goes with that, and then Pray for America. Our number 1-800-5-HIV. War.